and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. Former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich gets a second chance. How local politicians are responding to his pardon and what it means in the world of political corruption. And a project aimed at keeping invasive carp out of the Great Lakes is the latest to get caught in the political crosshairs between the Trump administration and the state of Illinois. And now to some of today's top stories. If you're heading into the office tomorrow, you might want to think about how you're getting home. The National Weather Service Chicago says an impactful winter storm is expected Wednesday, making for hazardous travel conditions, especially during the evening commute. Meteorologists are predicting between 4 and 8 inches in some areas. Up to now, Chicago hasn't had much of it, just 2.4 inches of snow in December and 4.6 in January. Cook County is reminding residents to take extra precautions, slow down, and watch for snowplows. For the first time, 5 of the hundreds of people, mostly men, are speaking out about the alleged physical and sexual abuse they experienced in the state's juvenile detention facilities.
This is a picture of me and the Navy SEAL cadets before Harrisburg. I was a good kid in a situation, and staff members there took advantage of me and my fear and preyed on me. She gave me drugs and alcohol and used her power to sexually abuse me. Too much has happened in these detention centers for no one at the states have known about it. The sexual abuse triggered something in me. I felt so much self-doubt. I attempted to commit suicide because of how it haunts me. But this is so much bigger than me now.
Attorneys say another 133 cases were filed against the state of Illinois yesterday alone, bringing the total to more than 800 people alleging they were abused by staff at the Illinois Youth Centers in Chicago, St. Charles, and Harrisburg, as well as the Cook County Temporary Juvenile Detention Center. The first cases were filed in May 2024, claiming abuse that occurred between 1995 to 2022, when the victims ranged from 9 to 17 years old. Still no verdict in the corruption trial of former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan. Today marked the 10th day of deliberations as jurors worked their way toward a verdict after months of testimony and evidence. Madigan and his longtime friend and ally, Michael McLean, are facing racketeering, bribery, and wire fraud charges. Both men have pleaded not guilty. To get caught up on the trial, you can check out our website. The family of Sonia Massey could be receiving a $10 million settlement from Sangamon County. Board members are set to meet tonight to discuss and vote on the agreement. Massey was 36 years old when she was shot and killed in her kitchen by a sheriff's deputy who responded to her 911 call about a possible prowler at her home. Her family says she struggled with mental health issues. The deputy, Sean Grayson, is charged with first-degree murder. Up next, with the pardon of former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich, we look at the public perception of political corruption.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Knows a thing or two about corrupt politicians. As we just mentioned, the jury deliberating the corruption case of former House Speaker Michael Madigan still hasn't reached a verdict. But some politicians, despite charges or convictions, can get a second chance. On Monday, President Trump granted a full pardon to former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich, and the U.S. Department of Justice has dropped fraud charges against New York City Mayor Eric Adams. Here to talk more about this is David Melton, a board member for Reform Illinois. That's a nonpartisan research and advocacy organization for public participation in government. David, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, as we mentioned, President Trump commuting Blagojevich's sentence and now has granted him a full pardon. That commutation, of course, was about 5 years ago, calling his sentence, quote, a terrible injustice. What message does a pardon like this send?
It sends a message to corrupt politicians all over the country that they're free to belly back up to the bar. It's not only the pardon of Blagojevich. You have to couple that with the Eric Adams dropping of the prosecution, with the firing of inspectors general in the government, and with the assertion of essentially dictatorial powers by President Trump in various executive orders he's issued.
What does this say about the Trump administration and how it plans to do business?
Well, it says that the Trump administration is open to the way business was done in the middle of the 19th century, when political hires dominated government. We had no civil service, and bribes were a way of life. There was a lot of corruption of all sorts, and it appears, unfortunately, that we're headed back towards that era.
And Illinois, as we just said, as we know, has a long history of political corruption. Does granting clemencies or pardons to figures who have been convicted in a U.S. or a state court of law, does that challenge the public's trust?
I certainly do think it challenges the public trust. I think it actually is a little more destructive than that. I would say that the blanket pardons for the January 6th rioters sent a message to politicians, particularly in the federal government, that if they cross Trump, he will threaten them with extrajudicial violence and actions from people like the people who rioted on January 6th.
Does it invalidate the work of the courts and the justice system?
Well, that remains to be seen as to how strong the courts will be as a check on the president's ultimate power and on weeding out corruption. But those cases have yet to go up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and unfortunately this court, at least four members, if not a majority of this court, have indicated a certain amount of sympathy for the view that the president is a king rather than an elected official.
Except a pardon cannot be challenged. The president has the power to pardon whoever he chooses. Is what Trump is doing so different from what former other previous presidents have done?
I would say that many presidents have engaged in some abuses of the pardon power, but what President Trump has done raises it to a new level. And I think that you're right that the Constitution does not place any limits on the pardon power. Courts and the legislature have not seen fit to try and rein in that constitutional power in any way. That's an issue that we will probably have to address if in the unlikely event that the rest of the government does not become irrelevant because we turn into a dictatorship or a autocracy.
So New York City Mayor Eric Adams, he's been accused of accepting over $100,000 worth of gifts from Turkish citizens. Our own Mayor Brandon Johnson has been criticized for accepting gifts. Why is this such a concern?
Well, it's the first, we can call it small-scale bribery. That's what's been going on in all those cases. That's why we have restrictions on the kinds of gifts that public elected officials generally can accept. And that's led to the same kind of, issues that we have with Justice Thomas on the Supreme Court, where if any other federal judge had taken those kinds of gifts, they would be off the bench.
President Trump, he's put a pause on the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. First, explain for us what that is and
sure.
Why the pause.
The Foreign Corrupt Practices Act was adopted in the 1970s in the wake of disclosures that many large U.S. companies had paid bribes to get business abroad. There was a debate about whether we should allow U.S. companies to engage in bribery of government officials in other countries. And the argument was, well, bribery is common in some countries, and therefore, in order to effectively do business, we need to be able to bribe people. That argument was rejected by Congress when it passed the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, which prohibits American companies from engaging in bribery in foreign countries. And also from, there were also distortions in their financial statements that those public companies filed in the U.S. as a result of, to try and cover up those bribes.
What role should state attorneys general, including Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul, play in holding politicians accountable when federal oversight is no longer enough?
I think state attorney general should play a much heightened role And I think you're seeing that happen now with the 45 or so lawsuits that have been filed, many by coalitions of the of Democratic attorney generals around the country challenging many of the Trump executive orders. I think that it would be good for the Illinois Attorney General's office to focus a little more on corruption than they have historically. Historically, we've relied on the U.S. Attorney's Office here in the Northern District of Illinois, but that's now open to question as to how effective they will be given the Trump administration's willingness to tolerate higher levels of corruption. At the same time, there may be a temptation to abuse some of the powers of the U.S. attorney here because the Trump administration does not like Illinois' sanctuary city policies and has filed litigation challenging them.
Do you think we're seeing any meaningful reforms, or is corruption still deeply embedded in the system?
I think we have seen meaningful, if you look over the 250-year history of our country, we have seen meaningful improvements in reducing the level of corruption generally in our government. Things like adoption of the Civil Service Act, things like the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, and so on. However, in the short term, I have to confess that I'm not optimistic.
Okay, all right. Well, it's not the 19th century, as you said, but it sounds like there's room for more. David Melton, thank you so much for joining us. I'm sure we'll talk about this again.
Thank you for having me.
Up next, our Spotlight Politics team with local reaction on the Blagojevich pardon and much more. Stay with us. As discussed, in a state known for political corruption, many people are still trying to make sense of yesterday's presidential pardon of disgraced former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich, who Donald Trump says suffered, quote, a terrible injustice. Meanwhile, Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul joined AGs across the country in another lawsuit against the Trump administration, this time having to do with cutting medical research funding. And Governor J.B. Pritzker signs a law aimed at protecting domestic violence survivors. Here with all that and more is our Spotlight Politics team, Amanda Venicky, Heather Sharone, and Nick Blumberg. Welcome back, gang. So let's start by hearing what ex-Governor Rod Blagojevich, standing alongside his wife Patty in front of their Northside Chicago home, had to say last night.
Terrible thing that they did to me, a Democrat governor. Even worse, what they did to a Republican president, President Trump. And his resilience, his strength, his fortitude, his unwillingness to give in is an inspiration.
Okay, so Amanda Blagojevich showing no remorse last night. He says he broke no laws. He places the blame squarely on prosecutors. You've been talking to folks today about his pardon. What are you hearing?
A lot, for starters.
Sure.
People have a lot of reactions to this. It's not necessarily one of surprise, given that this is something that Blagojevich and his wife had clearly been working toward. He was, of course, a Democratic governor, turned full-on MAGA after his commutation, and working up, really, until this pardon, and who knows what may come, perhaps an ambassadorship. We don't know. But I think there is a lot of frustration on the part of legislators who were working with him at the time, or at least watched him work, because he didn't necessarily have a great relationship with the General Assembly when he was serving as Illinois' governor. And there is frustration that he never showed any sort of contrition for what they truly believe are his crimes. They say that Trump got it wrong. Even a Republican downstate lawmaker that I spoke with, who says that she likes a lot of what Trump is doing, says that he got it wrong here, and that this says very much the wrong message about corruption. She's frustrated that the General Assembly still, she says, hasn't done enough to try and become more ethical and really take steps there. And I'll add as well that there is frustration among Democrats that say, hey, wait a second, look at, for example, former Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr., who did serve his time, has apologized for his wrongdoing, still waiting for a pardon, and sort of the opposite that got him, again, still waiting, whereas Blagojevich sort of kissing the Trump ring and getting a reward for it despite never apologizing for the harm that these people, that many critics throughout Illinois believe that he caused for residents.
So when the president signed the pardon, he told a room full of reporters that Blagojevich is now, quote, cleaner than anybody in this room. Nick, what prompted that?
Well, the president was responding to a question about some reporting in recent days that, as Amanda mentioned, former Governor Blagojevich might be in line for an ambassadorship to Serbia. Blagojevich is famously of Serbian descent. He visited there last year, meeting with the gentleman who refers to himself as Crown Prince Alexander, although Serbia's monarchy has not been around since the 1940s. There has been speculation. Trump was asked about that reporting, at the signing, and said, no, I haven't been thinking about that, but maybe I should. So clearly this could be something that doesn't just completely, disappear. There's a lot of ambassadorships to fill out, and clearly this is someone who has spent a lot of his time, now campaigning on Trump's behalf. He had a Serbs for Trump event that Blagojevich attended during the RNC. So we will see where this goes.
No doubt we'll be seeing more of him. But Heather, has he indicated whether he'll run for office again? Can he run for office again?
Well, he was asked about that last night outside his house. He sort of elbowed his wife and said, she'll divorce me if I do, so I guess not. But the fact of the matter is that he was impeached and removed from office before he was even charged with a crime, or convicted of a crime, I should say. And that means that he is ineligible under state law to hold office in Illinois. So that governs state, local, county, the whole rigmarole. Now, he's always been eligible before the pardon, I guess after he got out of jail, to run for federal office. So if he wants to reclaim his seat in Congress, he can see about challenging Mike Quigley for that seat. Or, he could try to run, for, president. Maybe he wants to just take the whole thing. But local office, completely off limits. The suggestion by sort of Trump acolytes that he was going to run for mayor of Chicago is just simply not based in fact.
But there are others that we could see him running for if he chose to pursue that. Illinois politicians, of course, busy trying to stay on top of the latest executive orders, as we've mentioned, by the White House. Attorney General Kwame Raoul joining other AGs from around the country in lawsuits against the Trump administration. Amanda, can you bring us up to speed on some of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's really notable here is, first of all, that the whole nation is watching to see whether the president is going to abide by these various court rulings, because there's already been moves by the Trump administration to not do so, to continue with federal funding despite court-ordered pauses. Illinois is now defending itself against one lawsuit, and that, of course, is the suit brought by Trump's Department of Justice for sanctuary cities and interfering with immigration arrests is the allegation there. And then Illinois is party to four suits against the administration. So that's pretty rapid speed, of course. The first was filed the day after Trump's inauguration. So four suits as of January 21st, and that is, I'm going to check my notes so I don't forget any here. The federal funding pause, the birthright citizenship, the unauthorized disclosure of data to Elon Musk and these Doge employees, and then also now, of course, this latest one that would really hurt some of Illinois' premier universities when it comes to university funding. So those are the four. They're staying active, and a lot of it is really uniting with other Democratic attorneys general across the nation.
Yeah, I have to imagine we may see more of them.
I imagine you're right.
Mm-hmm. Inundating the justice system and the courts. Okay, let's go to City Hall, because Heather, there is news about a top secret gift closet or gift room. Ethics Board, though, now calling for gift guidelines. Unwrap that for us.
Well, apparently there's been an unwritten informal agreement that allowed the mayor to accept gifts of more than $50 on behalf of the city, as long as he or she reported them on a log and stored them in that gift room at City Hall. Now, that informal arrangement, which dates all the way back to the late 1980s, is now over, revoked, donezo, says the chair of the Chicago Board of Ethics, which means that the mayor, like every other city employee and elected official, is now prohibited from accepting gifts worth more than $50 in a single calendar year from a single person, and that if he accepts a gift on behalf of the city, he has to report it not just to the Board of Ethics, but to the Comptroller, again, like any other city employee. Now, last week, the mayor's corporation counsel said that she was going to take a video of this gift closet and share it with us. That video is yet to be published, and the mayor had started holding weekly news conferences on Tuesday. He did not hold one today. There's certainly a lot going on, but that meant we didn't get a chance to ask about this new guidance from the Board of Ethics.
Okay. Nick, let's talk about public transit a little bit. A labor-backed coalition is filing a bill to reform transit. What's going on there?
Well, this is an attempt to head off the fiscal cliff facing CTA Metra and Pace next year when COVID-19 relief money from the federal government runs out. Some estimates have the cliff now up to $770 million, I believe, up from $750. So this is obviously a huge matter of concern. There are going to be major layoffs, major service cuts, if they can't come up with some sort of a fix. A lot of lawmakers have said they want to see reforms to the governance of these transit agencies before they come up with any extra cash. Now, there was, of course, that proposal we've reported on a lot to merge, you know, basically all the different transit operations into a new entity. This is a little bit more modest. This would basically create some governance reforms and some changes to the way, you know, the finances work there. For example, a big piece is how much of the revenue for their operating costs have to come from passenger fares versus how much can come from public support. There's all sorts of other stuff in there about better coordination, about improved safety and transit ambassador type efforts. What we don't know is how much this would cost. They're not saying whether this is going to get any extra funding, if it's just going to be sort of a funding patch to tide these agencies over. A lot of unanswered questions, but this is drawing some support, these more modest reforms, from folks who had previously talked about a wholesale merger. So this could be, this is definitely going to be a conversation starter, shall we say, in Springfield, although certainly those conversations have been going on for many months.
Yes, they have. All right, that's Spotlight, gang. Thanks so much, Amanda Vinicky, Heather Sharone, and Nick Blumberg. Up next, the latest on a project aimed at keeping invasive carp out of the Great Lakes. But first, a look at the weather. A project designed to keep invasive carp out of the Great Lakes has become the latest political battle in the ongoing struggle between the Trump administration and the state of Illinois. State officials say they can no longer count on the federal government to pony up the funds they committed to for the billion-dollar Brandon Road project. So the Illinois Department of Natural Resources pressed pause on a groundbreaking that was set for today. Our Patty Wetley joins us now with more on this. Patty, remind us what this project entails.
Yeah, so a quick recap on invasive carp. They've been slowly working their way up the Mississippi, and right now the Chicago waterway system is kind of the only thing between the invasive carp and them getting into the Great Lakes, where they could easily outcompete our native fish. These fish carp can get up to 100 pounds, eat a third of their weight a day, destroy the ecosystems, and take along all of the money we make from boating and fishing with them. So it's a huge concern, and they've identified this pinch point on the Des Plaines at the Brandon Road lock and dam, where they basically throw the kitchen sink of tactics to keep these carp at bay, whether it's a bubble curtain, acoustics, you name it. That's the point where our best shot is at keeping these carp from getting into the Great Lakes. So that's what the project is.
Okay, that's what the project is. But tell us why the funding is such a flashpoint and what has caused Illinois officials to be concerned about it.
Yeah, this funding for this project has always been an issue, because just because the carp have to get through Illinois to get into the Great Lakes, Governor Pritzker has always been adamant that that doesn't mean Illinois should pay the whole price for this. And Michigan doesn't really think they should be paying for it either. So they always wanted the feds to get involved, which they finally did. They finally allocated some $274 million, but they have, in recent weeks, you know, withheld other funds that were supposed to come to the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, over $100 million in projects that the funds are now paused on. So Illinois officials a little bit nervous that the same could happen with this, and again, doesn't want to put the state on the hook for this billion-dollar project. So groundbreaking was supposed to happen today. Officials are like, we're going to kind of wait and see how things play out. Maybe we'll try this again in May.
In May, hopefully, yes. And I'm sure, like, a point of frustration and concern for the folks who've worked on this.
Yes.
Just because I remember what a big deal it was when this was announced in
the
first
place. It's a scary thing if these carp do get into the Great Lakes. And people have wanted this project to happen for so long. The funding was finally there. All the pieces finally in place. And now just that nervousness again. Is it or isn't it going to happen?
All right. Patty Whetley, I'm sure you'll keep an eye on how the rest of it plays out.
We
Thanks
will.
So much.
Thanks.
And you can read Patty's full story on our website. It is all at WTTW.com/news. And that's our show for this Tuesday night. Stay connected with our reporters and what they're working on by following us on Instagram at WTTW Chicago. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. A look at how body cameras can affect an officer's response to a deadly police-involved shooting. Now for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thanks for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to be a multilingual law firm that provides translators for a variety of languages.